And now it's time for us to discuss more of these headlines and simple keywords with Adam joining us via Zoom. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Lena. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Good to see you.
Always good to see you too.
All right, let's get started. We're going to begin with a follow-up to yesterday's headlines on the Iranian barrage of Israeli soil. World leaders are urging Israeli restraint. What's in the works? This is the latest, starting with our first keyword of the day.
Mulling retaliation.
So Israel is reportedly weighing options on how to respond to that Iranian attack over the weekend, but Israel is seemingly careful not to trigger a full-scale war. It seems like that's not what Iran wants, that's not what Israel wants, nor the rest of the world. What's the latest?
Yeah, so there is a lot of international pressure on Israel to not go fully out on the military action, but local media reports that Israel's war cabinet is leaning towards a retaliatory approach that would be painful for Iran, but wouldn't trigger a full-scale war. So they want to send a message, but without doing so, without incurring devastating consequences. Now, Israeli Channel 12 noted that the war cabinet discussed several options for retaliation. Members debated the timing and scope of such a response that would not escalate into a regional war and would be acceptable to allies like the US. Now, the US has warned that if Israel were to retaliate, especially with military action, that it would be on its own and that the US would not be joining in such responses. Now, multiple countries are also urging restraint as well. Now, among the military options, the war cabinet is considering an attack reportedly on an Iranian facility that would send a message but would avoid causing casualties. So they certainly do want to send a message in some scale. Now, the war cabinet is also mulling diplomatic options as well to further isolate Iran on the world stage. Now, some members believe that the longer Israel delays its response to Iran's attack, the harder it will be to garner international support for such a retaliatory action. Now, Israel's government is aware that the country is currently enjoying somewhat of an international support and goodwill from its allies and does not want to, of course, squander that. At the same time, the government recognizes that it cannot allow Iran's, especially first attack on Israeli soil, to go unanswered. So it's in a kind of a tough balancing act at the moment. Now, meanwhile, Reuters reports that Iran informed Turkey in advance of its planned operation against Israel, adding that Washington had conveyed to Tehran via Ankara that any action it took had to be within certain limits. That's the report from Reuters. The Pentagon press secretary said Iran did not give the US an advance notice of its attack on Israel. The Iranian foreign ministry also emphasized that there was no prearranged deal with any country regarding the attack as well. So it was kind of anticipated, but according to the US and Iran, there weren't any premeditated plans in terms of the attack.
All right. And on a related note, of course, South Korea's foreign ministry has to respond how to protect our own. And what about oil prices? Some of those points to address our second keyword of the day.
Protecting Koreans.
So Korea's foreign ministry has held a meeting to discuss the recent Iranian attack and to check on measures to protecting overseas Koreans in the region. What came out of this meeting?
Right, so the meeting was chaired by Minister Cho Tae-yeol and attended by ambassadors to Israel, Iran, Lebanon, and the head of the Palestinian office, joining via video conference. They talked about the current situation and safety in the Middle East and reviewed safety plans for Koreans living in Israel, Iran, and also other nearby areas. Now, Cho urged everyone to keep a close watch on local conditions and work together to ensure the safety of Koreans in those regions. He specifically asked the officials to thoroughly prepare safety measures for Korean citizens, businesses, ships, and embassies, and to regularly check for any risks to Korea's economy and security. The ministry has also issued a special travel advisory for parts of Iran. The finance ministry, meanwhile, has decided to extend the tax cut on fuel consumption by an additional 2 months amid growing tensions in the Middle East. Korea has applied a 25% discount on the consumption of gasoline and a 37% discount on the consumption of diesel and LPG, liquefied petroleum gas, which were supposed to expire at the end of this month. Now, Finance Minister Choe Sang-won warned that the crisis in the Middle East could lead to growing volatility in the financial market and possible supply chain risks, vowing to, quote, stay vigilant and mobilize all possible policy capabilities.
So for now, it seems keeping a watchful eye and looking for contingency plans there. Now, let's turn our attention back to South Korea's political arena. It did sort of take a backseat to the larger brewing conflict in the Middle East, but just about a week ago, the PPP faced a pretty grueling defeat, and the president has to talk about it. Our third keyword of the day.
Addressing defeat.
If you think about it, it is a pretty healthy part of democracy, but it must be tough to be in that position. President Yoon plans to address a nation regarding the ruling party's defeat in last week's general elections during a televised cabinet meeting. The pressure is on. What can we expect?
Yeah, of course, no one likes to lose, but of course, if you're in politics,
it's tough being graceful, isn't it?
Yeah, but of course, if you're in politics, you do have to take it gracefully and, of course, speak about it. And that's what the president is planning to do. According to the presidential office, Yoon plans to discuss his assessment of the election outcome and outline envisioned changes to approach governing. Now, he also plans to express his thoughts on cooperation with the new National Assembly as well, which, of course, the opposition has got a hold of the majority once again and expanded on it in terms of the whole opposition bloc. Now, he is likely to emphasize the need for collaboration across party lines. He may also address potential reshuffling of major positions, such as the Prime Minister and the Chief of Staff, especially since these officials have recently offered to resign. Now, though there was speculation about a possible public address or press conference, so him standing on a podium and delivering a nationwide address, it has been decided by the top office that the upcoming cabinet meeting will suffice for making these announcements. Now, those today's remarks will be his first in person. Yoon did issue a brief statement through his chief of staff the day after the elections. In that, he said he would humbly uphold the people's will shown in the general elections and work to reform state affairs and stabilize people's livelihoods. Also, during a regular meeting with Prime Minister Han Duck-soo, Yoon emphasized that public livelihood is the top priority, and he urged his team to focus on stabilizing public welfare. Yoon is also expected to reorganize the presidential office as well in the wake of the election defeat. In particular, he is reportedly considering establishing a new position of Senior Presidential Secretary for Legal Affairs to better monitor public opinion. So there was possibly some criticism and some assessments that maybe the government was a bit out of touch with how what the public was feeling and public sentiments. So, of course, after in light of this election defeat, the presidential office will also put in measures to better gauge how the public is thinking of the government and the president.
It's difficult to gauge public consensus. I mean, if you think about the lies that we tell our friends, if you think about it, right? I mean, we don't always speak the truth. How do you gauge a consensus amongst tricky people?
Exactly. White lies in politics can be detrimental.
All right, well, wait and see. That's the plan anyways. Let's move on to the economy section, our fourth keyword of the day.
Price hikes.
All right. So following the elections, there appears to be a wave of price hikes in the dining and food retail sectors, particularly fried chicken franchises have raised their menu prices and some subscription services have increased their monthly fees as well. Again, what's the latest?
Yeah. So again, more things are getting more expensive, unfortunately. Right. So there's as we thought there might be, you know, a downturn in inflation, it has picked up recently. And of course, companies and retailers and distributors inevitably have to raise their prices and fees as well. It appears that the food and dining industries have been waiting until after the elections to adjust their prices. There were a few chicken franchises that did raise their prices last year. but more are following suit. Yesterday, Kumne Chicken, a major franchise here in Korea, announced a price increase of 1,900 won for 9 of their chicken dishes, citing rising delivery fees, labor costs, and rental expenses. This is their first price increase in 2 years. Popeyes, another popular franchise, also raised the prices of its chicken sandwiches, desserts, and drinks by an average of 4%. For delivery items, prices are about 5% higher than store prices. Now, following Kumne and Popeyes, other food and dining companies are expected to raise their prices. As well, food retailers mentioned that many factors are pushing for a price increase, but they have been trying to hold off as long as possible, partly due to pressure from the government. Distribution companies have raised their service prices too, and also spreading to other subscription services as well. One particularly for retailer Coupang increased the monthly fee for its so-called WOW membership from 4,991 to 7,891. That's a more than 58% hike, and this is the first increase since December 2021. New members have been subject to the new fee since Saturday, and existing members will see the change starting with their first payment in August. The increase in Coupang's membership fees is seen as a move to secure financial resources in anticipation of fierce competition with Chinese e-commerce companies like AliExpress and Temu. Of course, are being very successful here in Korea, undercutting prices and becoming very popular with their, you know, free deliveries and fast deliveries, considering it is overseas shipping. So yeah, in light of that, things are getting expensive, unfortunately. So yeah, the consumer suffers at the end.
It's in the very early stages, but I saw the headline, so I must share. I think it was AliExpress who's eyeing to collaborate with space agencies to look at even faster deliveries, like overnight international deliveries. And I thought, that's something, that's something else. Even if it's in the very, very early stages, right? If you can envision it, apparently you can eye it.
I wonder how space agencies will help with the delivery process. Will they be shot up to space and then kind of plummeted down back to Earth?
Somewhere in the middle. I can't give you the technological hurdles that stand in the way, but just the idea itself kind of floored me, and I wonder how environmentalists feel about it.
we'll have to see. But of course, you know, drones are being utilized for deliveries
as well.
So maybe their range of use might go across borders. Who knows? But yeah.
All right. But addressing not those challenges particularly, but at least a growing competition, Coupang had to hike up its fees. All right. Let's move on to our final keyword of the day.
TIPS Act grant.
So the U.S. government says it would support Samsung Electronics with a subsidy of $6.4 billion for its major chip investments in the state of Texas. This makes Samsung the third largest CHIPS Act award recipient. Can you tell us the details of the plan?
Yeah, so the third largest CHIPS Act award recipient overall, and the largest, of course, for a Korean tech giant. Now, the funding from the 2022 CHIPS and Science Act will support two chip production facilities, a research center, and a packaging facility in Taylor. It'll also enable Samsung to expand its Austin semiconductor facility while boosting chip output for the aerospace, defense, and auto industries, and bolstering national security. The Commerce Department revealed that this agreement supports Samsung's plan to roughly invest $45 billion in the U.S. over the space of a decade, and it is expected to create over 21,500 jobs. Joe Biden highlighted this investment as an example of how his so-called Invest in America agenda and the U.S.-Korea alliance are creating opportunities across the U.S. He reiterated that the CHIPS Act is designed to restore U.S. leadership in semiconductor manufacturing and help maintain access to chips. Of course, the whole aim, or part of the aim of this whole CHIPS Act and relevant policies by the Biden administration, is because it is wary of the upcoming chip industries in China and Taiwan. So they're certainly making some grounds in that area, and the U.S. doesn't want to fall behind. The subsidy for Samsung, as you mentioned, is one of the largest, following those granted to U.S. company Intel and Taiwanese company TSMC. Samsung's first plant will start mass production of 2 and 4 nanometer chips from 2026, and the second one the year after. The additional investment by Samsung will also be spent on expanding its existing facilities in Austin as well. Of course, Samsung didn't really have much of a choice but to kind of pledge these investments ever since those acts, the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act were implemented. Of course, because it will be missing out on those subsidies if it doesn't make those investments. So its hand was forced, so to say, and there you have it. But it appears that Samsung will be getting a large amount of subsidies. SK Hynix has also made some investment pledges as well. Whether they'll get similar subsidies remains to be seen, but no detailed announcement on that just yet.
All right, the latest on the chips war. We'll leave it there for now. Adam, thank you so much for today's coverage. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're very welcome. See you tomorrow.
If you're listening to our program using the podcast service, just a reminder that we do go live Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. Korea Standard Time. So tune in and help us make the show more informative by giving us your input. See you bright and early on Good Morning Seoul.